America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program today. Mr. Hartman is away. He is traveling to Germany, where he is participating in a conference called Salem International. That's an organization that Tom and Louise have been involved with for many, many years. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco, and I'm delighted to be with you. It's a beautiful day here by the bay, which is the color of Superman's hair for the moment, and it's going to be a nice one here. We've got a lot to talk about. I'll be here today. Laura Flanders in for Tom Hartman tomorrow, Sam Cedar on Monday, and then Tom will return next Tuesday on all of these great radio stations, satellite radio, the Internet, however you happen to be hooked up. I am delighted you are with us. In our first segment here, I'm going to go straight to the phone. So if you have a comment, particularly about the theatrics in Washington this week related to our occupation of Iraq, bring it on. 866-303-2270 is the toll-free number. 866-303-2270. I'd like to dedicate the program today to two great Americans. Staff Sergeant Yance T. Gray, age 26, and Sergeant Omar Mora, age 28, two non-commissioned officers who were killed in Baghdad on September 10th. And they had the courage to co-author with four or five other non-commissioned officers serving in Iraq an op-ed that was published on the 19th of August in the New York Times entitled "The War as We See It." And I single out Sergeant Gray and Sergeant Mora and their colleagues because they didn't spin the situation in Iraq. They didn't use euphemized language to describe the mess that we're in. And they were honest in their description of what's going on there. A couple of quick quotes. "The claim that we are increasingly in control of the battlefields in Iraq is an assessment arrived at through a flawed American-centered framework. Yes, we are militarily superior. But our successes are offset by failures elsewhere. What soldiers call the battle space remains the same, with changes only at the margins. It's crowded with actors who do not fit neatly into boxes. Sunni extremists, Al-Qaeda terrorists, Shiite militiamen, criminals, and armed tribes. This situation is made more complex by the questionable loyalties and Janus-based role of the Iraqi police and Iraqi army, which have been trained and armed at United States taxpayers' expense." Now, since these brave soldiers wrote their op-ed piece, we've seen a couple of interesting reports come out. The commission headed by General Jones, retired from the Marines, told us that the Iraqi police force is so riddled with problems that we've got to start over. And this is after the, you know, we can stand down when they stand up routine has been played out for over 3 years. And they tell us the Iraqi army, while it's in better shape than the police force, is also riddled with sectarian influence, mostly Shiite, and that it will be at least 18 months before the army can stand up on its own. So these soldiers told the truth, and compare that to what you heard from Ambassador Crocker and General Petraeus this week. Have you heard the zippy new phrase? I take it to mean civil war, but they can't get those two simple words out. It's called ethno-sectarian competition for power and resources. Isn't that a doozy? We can't say civil war. Ethno-sectarian competition for power and resources. And in there, there were some interesting moments of honesty. On the NewsHour on PBS last night, Ambassador Crocker acknowledged that last year was the truly horrendous year of 2006, with massive displacements, sectarian killings. And he said, we don't want things to spiral down like that again. And ask yourselves, who was in charge in Iraq just 1 year ago? Zalmay Khalilzad, one of the neocons, part of the Project for a New American Century, a darling of the Bush administration, who is now our ambassador to the United Nations. And Mr. Crocker was polite enough not to blame Khalilzad for his failures. And that is a hallmark of this administration. We keep shifting, moving the timeline forward. Nobody is responsible for the mistakes that have been made, the policy blunders that have been piled one on top of another. And hey, remember John Negroponte? He was the ambassador to Iraq before Khalilzad. Yesterday, he was in Pakistan licking the boots of General Musharraf, saying that the U.S. has no opinion about the way he deported Sharif, the former prime minister whom he deposed in a coup in 1999 and who was given a green light by the Supreme Court in Pakistan to return. So these are very interesting times, and the truth is a great casualty. It will suffer further setbacks in prime time tonight, as President Bush will give a speech based on the so-called Petraeus recommendations, which will leave us in Iraq for years and years to come. So let's go to your calls now. I'd like to hear from you, 866-303-2270. And let's just go to Mike in Westchester. I've picked you out of the blue here, Mike. Welcome
Hello.
To the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. How are you doing today?
Not too bad, thank you.
Okay, yeah, the reason I called is I wanted to point out that tonight the president, I expect, will ask the American people for time and patience, as if that is all it would take for this. But we know that what he was really asking for is blood and money. It's estimated that at least 1,000 more Americans are going to die in Iraq in the next year. If we spread that over evenly over 50 states, it's 20 per state, but we all know that that is not the way it works. It's not an even distribution any more than it's an even distribution among the underprivileged and those of privilege. It's going to fall mostly on the working poor and the middle class of this nation that comprise our volunteer army.
Mm-hmm.
And if that wasn't enough, let's consider the billions of dollars that have been spent and will be spent in Iraq. But this president has refused, for the first time in our history, perhaps in the history of civilization, to raise taxes for, instead prefers to borrow so that our children and our grandchildren or our great-grandchildren will pay back with interest.
Very good point, Mike. The other thing that I think we need to note here is that General Petraeus is refusing to talk about troop levels. He said he can't make a decision until next March. Now, this is such a crock, pardon me, Ambassador Crocker, but it is a crock, because he's sitting here saying, well, I can commit to, bringing back what was the surge. So basically 30,000 troops that we increased in 07 will be, will reduce by that amount by the summer of 08, meaning that this so-called surge was just a feint, just a way to distract Americans and, militarily, 30,000 troops in a country of 26 million people is not significant. And so the success that they're claiming from the surge is an illusion. The idea that they are voluntarily drawing down forces is an illusion. They had to do that because they're maxed out and rotations could not be further extended. And so they are taking a set of facts and pretending that we've had success and that that's the reason we are now going to, quote unquote, draw down. But it's not a real drawdown, and when you drill in and ask General Petraeus how long will troops be in Iraq, he responded on the news hour last night to a comment from Speaker Pelosi, who says we're going to have a large force there for at least 10 years. And using a convoluted Pentagonese speak, he basically said, well, yeah, but probably not more than 10 years.
Well, you know, this is why I advocate that everyone call up the senator from Rhode Island who will be doing the Democratic response. I'm sorry, his name escapes me at the moment.
Sheldon Whitehouse. Oh, no, it'll be Jack Reed.
Jack Reed. Everybody needs to call his office today, and please tell him that it's time for him to call upon both houses of Congress, both parties, to rise above politics and defund this war. Let's put our money where their mouth is, okay? And, everybody says, oh, the war is horrible, and I have questions. Let's do something about it. Let's defund this war. It is the only action that I'm aware of under the Constitution that this our legislators can do for us to stop this madness.
Well, Mike, I would up the ante by this, that Speaker Pelosi needs to take a very strong leadership role. It is the House that originates all appropriations measures. The President has asked for another $50 billion, plus the annual defense budget is up for renewal. And this is where the Democrats have got to dig in their heels and say, you're not going to get everything you ask for, and what we do give you is going to come with timelines, restrictions, and a demand for the return of our troops to this soil. Mike, thanks for your call. We'll go back to your calls in just a moment. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom Hartman today.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
We continue on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. There's a live chat underway at TomHartman.com and some activity, too, at AirAmerica.com. You can email me directly, Peter at PeterBCollins.com, and I'm happy to see your comments. I've got time during the breaks to check them out. That's Peter at PeterBCollins.com. A couple more things about the representations, the assertions of Admiral Crocker and General Petraeus in their performances in Washington this week. Ryan Crocker volunteered that there's some good news coming out of Iraq. He said, you know, the central government may be dysfunctional, and it's got an upward trajectory, but the slope is not steep. How do you like that lingo, huh? You ever get up in the morning and you just feel like crap? And you tell yourself, well, my trajectory is upward, but the slope is not steep. Oh, I amused myself too much. Sorry. Anyway, Ryan Crocker was bragging about how the central government under our puppet, Mr. Maliki, is doing a fine job in resource distribution. That is, that oil revenues collected in Baghdad are being distributed, he says, fairly, without any discrimination based on religion or ethnicity, and without an oil-sharing law. Well, front page, lead story, New York Times today, Dateline Baghdad. Iraq compromise on oil law seems to be collapsing. Baghdad at odds with Kurds. And, of course, the real truth about this oil deal is that the Iraqis are fighting over the net. What's left over after multinational oil companies, including U.S.-based oil companies, are able to grab and exploit the huge oil reserves under the ground there in Iraq. And so this is a murky picture. And again, every time they try to claim progress, information surfaces that either directly contradicts them or just undermines the credibility of their statements. Peter in Los Angeles, you're next on the Tom Hartman Program. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. I was calling about this issue and how the Democrats on the committees who are questioning Petraeus haven't really, they're doing the effort, a whole disservice, by focusing on the statistics as if they were real. I don't know if you heard Senator Obama saying, well, now that the statistics have gone from horrible to just intolerable, that's not good, is it? But what the problem is that he's assuming that statistics are real and that there is, in fact, a decrease in violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really the case.
Well, Peter, you make a good point, and the Democrats really are sorely lacking in message discipline and message unity. And as an example, on the PBS NewsHour the other night, Donald Payne, a Democratic congressman from New Jersey, he's got the right views, okay? He's a member of the Out of Iraq Caucus and a staunch opponent to this occupation. But he was there allowing us how, he said this, the military surge is working. But then he went on to say that there's no political reconciliation. Well, Congressman Payne, first of all, it's not true. And secondly, it is not politically adept for you to say that in this context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, and the problem is that no one's questioning the fact that all these statistics, even the methodology by which they're collected is classified. And we know exactly the way this administration works. If there was anything that helped show their case, mm-hmm. well, they would show it. But since they don't have anything to rely on, they manipulate the statistics, say it's classified, and then way down the road we'll find out, you know, what the real story is, which is exactly the opposite.
And, Peter, I haven't heard anybody, I couldn't watch all the testimony, but I haven't heard or seen a report of any member of Congress who challenged these statistics with the notion that they haven't been telling us, for example, about Iraqi civilian casualties all along. Rumsfeld was proud of not collecting that data. And so now, all of a sudden, when they feel they can spin the data in their favor, they lay it out for us. Isn't that beautiful? Thank you, Peter. I appreciate your call. Now, my screen's gone a little sideways here, but I think Leonard is still on the line from Arizona. Leonard, join us.
Hey, it's been a long time, sir. I miss hearing your voice, so it's good to hear you again.
Well, it's nice to hear from you, Leonard, and I know you're a proud veteran of the occupation of Iraq. Tell me what's on your mind today. What's your reaction to the Petraeus song and dance?
Well, what's on my mind is the courageous journalists out there like yourself who are at least speaking up for my fellow soldiers who, quite frankly, are afraid to speak up because they've been told they could be put in jail. They've been told they'll lose their benefits. Their families will not be taken care of. So when a man or a woman hears, hey, your children might not have medical insurance anymore, we'll cut off your benefits, even though you want to speak the truth, you say to yourself, what about my daughter? What about my son? So I want to thank you for speaking up for the soldiers that can't speak up, knowing if they do, these hooligans that have been put in charge of them will take away their benefits to their families. Mm-hmm. What's on my mind is basically, okay, I have been back a while now. I got back February of last year, and we were in the Baghdad area. The Iraqi police, we knew never to trust them. There's beautiful Iraqi people out there that treated us nice, but we knew they wanted us out. They were happy that we were there. One Iraqi police station alone had lost $5 million. A police chief would not explain. We thought he was sending it to insurgents that were killing my very fellow soldiers. So thank you. Keep up the good work. Give them hell, and let's do something about this. If our political party won't do something, let's go out on the streets, and let's let these people know we want to bring my fellow soldiers home.
Leonard, thanks for your passion. Thanks for your service. I'm Peter B. Collins here on the Tom Hartman Program, 866-303-2270. Congressman Jim McDermott joins us next.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
It's the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. Loving that little blues riff to ease us into the next segment here. Congressman Jim McDermott is a Democrat who represents Seattle, and he joins us on the Tom Hartman Program today. Dr. McDermott, how are you?
Good, Peter. How are you?
Well, I wondered if, since you're a psychiatrist, I wondered if I could get on your couch figuratively here just for a moment.
Well, because it depends. There's some people for whom there's no hope.
Well, I'm having a mood disorder that I would call Crocker. And the way it feels, doctor, is my trajectory is up, but the slope is not very steep. Can you help me with that?
I would suggest you turn off your television. Don't watch any more of those hearings in Washington, D.C.
All right, now this may not require psychiatric expertise, but can you explain this term to me? Ethno-sectarian competition for power and resources.
Well, it's a term designed to confuse the public as to what's going on in Iraq. There's no straight talk coming out in this testimony about what's really going on. It's really designed as a part of a PR campaign to keep us there until the next election. And they'll use a lot of words that people walk away thinking, what in the world was that about? And not really understand it. It really is a very confusing situation, and they are further confusing it only to convince the American people that we ought to stay there for another year.
Now, ethno-sectarian competition for power and resources, isn't that commonly known as civil war?
That's what I call it. I just say civil war, but they will not use the term civil war. mm-hmm. because we're not in a civil war. They've convinced themselves we're not, and they have to convince the rest of the world that we're not in a civil war.
Congressman, I've dedicated this program today to the memory of two sergeants, Omar Mora and Yance Gray. They died in Iraq a couple of days ago. And they were some of the co-authors of this powerful op-ed published in the New York Times on August 19th, where they really gave us a dose of reality. And let me just read you this one sentence here, and then I want to compare it to what General Petraeus has told us. They write, the battle space is really complicated in Iraq. It's crowded with actors who don't fit neatly into boxes. Sunni extremists, Al-Qaeda terrorists, Shiite militiamen, criminals, and armed tribes. Yet General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker repeatedly refer to the enemy by only one moniker, and that's Al-Qaeda. Now, I'm really confused by this because every reliable report indicates that Al-Qaeda represents far less than 10% of the armed fighting forces arrayed against us in Iraq, and the Bush administration claims that we have killed almost all of them three or four times. So I'm really struggling here to understand who our enemy is and therefore what our mission is.
Well, I think, Peter, what you're uncovering really for the people is the fact that this war was sold to us on a lot of dishonest bases, one of which is that it was Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And we have to create Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And it's a myth. I was looking at the clips from the newspaper yesterday when I was coming back from Washington. The best estimates are that they're less than 5%, and maybe even as low as 2% of the people fighting in Iraq are actually Al-Qaeda. But if they talked about the violence that we had created and set up between the Sunni and Shia and by our creation of the CPA by Paul Bremer, all those things, if they talked about that, they would lose this business about we're fighting a war on terror. And they've got They have Osama bin Laden and a war on terror, and that's what they're hanging on to desperately to convince the American people that there's a war on terror, and as long as we fight it in Iraq, we don't have to fight it at home. But this clearly is a PR device. It is not the real facts on the ground. And these soldiers, I read this story this morning about them dying, and was sad, too, that guys who talk truth to power ultimately go out and get killed when their 5-ton truck overturns. You say to yourself, we need more like that, and unfortunately the American people are listening to them, but the president isn't.
How long are we going to be in Iraq in a major way, Congressman McDermott?
Well, my anticipation is that certainly we'll be there till the election of 2008. I think the 20th of January 2009, we may have a chance when a new president comes into office to get out. But I really think in the bottom of my heart that we're there for probably 20 years, much as we've been in Korea and in Japan and in Germany. We are putting our troops there for strategic reasons, and the bases they're building are not temporary bases. They are building four large bases associated with airstrips, which to me says this is a long-term commitment to have a military presence. We're going to occupy Iraq for at least the next 20 years.
Well, Congressman, given that, and I don't want to accept it. I'm not disagreeing or disputing. I just don't want to accept that as a reality. But if that is the case, why is it that General Petraeus is playing a game, almost a farcical one, saying that, well, you know, we are drawing down the brigades that we brought in for the so-called surge, and he's trying to spin that up, that some of the troops that are going to come home in the next 4 to 6 months, it's a voluntary drawdown and not something that was going to occur anyway. So he is definitely spinning on that. But he then says that you've got to give him until next March. This is an arbitrary timeline, and of course we just experienced an arbitrary timeline that was created this past spring in the September Petraeus report. So now they have succeeded, if his gambit works, in buying an additional year, and in round numbers, that is $100 billion, and that is somewhere near 1,200 American lives lost. And I, for one, cannot countenance that.
Well, unfortunately, Peter, we are looking at a situation where we do not have the votes in the House and Senate to overturn. The president is running this as a war by veto, and he can continue to veto things that we try to get him to do. And until the Republican Party makes a decision that being at war in 2008 is not a good political strategy, they will continue to support the president, and we're stuck with this. Now, I said yesterday on Canadian radio, I kind of wish we had a parliament where we had votes of confidence, because if we had a vote of confidence, he'd be gone tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you make of some of the stronger statements coming from Senator Obama, candidate for president, and Senator Edwards is kind of amping up his remarks as well? I just got an email from a listener. He's going to be on MSNBC tonight responding to the president's address. Do you think we're going to start to get more leadership from our presidential candidates?
I think that the candidates on the Democratic side are aware that the public is totally, I mean, they're way more than a majority against the president. And I think the Democratic members who are running are beginning to respond to that and getting a little more courageous. I wish they'd been more courageous a long time ago, but a democracy works on the will of the people, and the people have now given up on this war. They do not believe it's bringing us either security or long-term stability in the world, and that we're not going to win it, and we're not going to establish a democracy. And I think the presidential candidates are going to become clearer and clearer in their message.
Critics of the Democratic leadership from the left are concerned that our leaders feel that by doing nothing, that the Republicans will implode, and that there'll be just a huge surge of support for Democrats in November of 2008. And if that is the case, I am concerned that that could be a major miscalculation, because I think that in the next year, a lot of Democrats may just become so cynical and disaffected that turnout could be sharply affected, and it could lead to Republican victories that would surprise Democrats.
I don't. An old Texas friend of mine in the Congress, Henry Gonzalez, one time said to me, Jim, it's always too soon to congratulate yourself. And I think any Republican, any Democrat who thinks that we're going to win just by sitting back and folding our hands and watching them do themselves in is simply doesn't understand the political process. The American people want to see a positive response from the Democrats. They want to see us show leadership, not only in Iraq, but on the issue of health care and on children's health care and on the environment and on what we're doing about global warming and all the rest of this. We cannot count on the Republicans to do themselves in. And I agree with those people who are worried that there are some who think we can get there by just letting them do themselves in. That will not work.
Mm-hmm. All right. Congressman, just before I let you go, one unrelated question. I'm very concerned about the way the Holt bill, H.R. 811, which was intended to fix our electoral process and fix the electronic voting machine problems, I think it has been spun out of control in committee. It's now locked down in the Rules Committee, and there is a possibility of an amendment from Congresswoman Davis of San Diego, which would be a complete ban on touchscreen voting machines, which I think would help fix the Holt bill, not make it perfect. What's your current position on Holt and the potential Davis amendment?
First of all, I was a sponsor with Rush Holt of that bill originally, and I really think Rush has done a very thoughtful, he's one of the more thoughtful members of Congress, and I think has tried very hard to deal with this issue of the unreliability of electronic voting through computers. I have not seen what Susan Davis is proposing, but I'm not sure. One of the things that's happening now, in fact, I'm getting it from my own county, is county officials saying to me, we can't be ready by 2008. My answer to that is, oh, yes, you can. Mm-hmm. It's the most important thing that goes on in democracy. Everything else should sit to the side until you get the election straight so that the people have confidence that what happens on election day is what their will was. I think that what happened in 2000, what really shook the American people's belief in the electoral process, and we have to correct that, and I'm not sure the specifics exactly of where Rush's bill is at the moment, Rush Holt's bill, mm-hmm. but I'm supportive of putting that at the front of our agenda.
Because
I think it's the most important thing.
Well, please take a close look, because I think that we need to have open source code if we're going to use electronic voting machines, and I would like a total ban as soon as possible. Thank you very much for your commentary today, Congressman. A pleasure talking with you.
Same to you. Good luck.
That's
bye-bye.
Jim McDermott, Democrat from Washington State, representing Seattle and the SeaTac area. We'll go back to your calls in just a moment here on the Tom Hartman Program. From San Francisco, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
The Tom Hartman Program, and that's the Guess Who. I'm Peter B. Collins, and it's always fun to do the Hartman Show. His bumper music comes up kind of like an iPod on shuffle. And I'm not sure how the Guess Who fit in here, but it's great to hear Burton Cummings and the band again. Our toll-free number is 866-303-2270. Back to your calls here in just a second. I want to thank Shirley and Moon in San Francisco for an email. And they sent along a report from the Interpress Service News Agency. And first, I want to remind folks that in the Senate hearings the other day, Barbara Boxer, my senator from here in California, did what everybody else did. They didn't actually allow the general and the ambassador to say anything. They just peppered them with questions, and then their time was up. But along the way, Boxer made reference to the quote of President Bush from his recent visit to Australia, where he said that we are kicking ass, or probably he said kicking ass, he doesn't use his G's too much, kicking ass in Iraq. And as the senator, observing Senate decorum, approached that quote, she said that the president said we are kicking ASS. I just thought that was cute. So this item that the listeners emailed is a report saying that when General Petraeus first reported for duty in Iraq, and had a meeting with his boss, the Chief of Central Command, Admiral William Fallon. Fallon made some comments to Petraeus in soldier talk that I will approximate here and sanitize a little bit for the radio. Fallon told Petraeus that he considered him to be an ass-kissing little chicken, shh, and added, "I hate people like that." So those two folks are not getting along real well. And that has started to surface, and I find that interesting and a little bit amusing. Richard in Oakland, just across the bay, listening on 960, Green 960, KKGN. Welcome to the program, Richard. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. I have just a couple of moments. I'm on the way to a doctor's appointment. General Petraeus, in his testimony to the Senate, made, I thought, a rather damning statement. And he used, the word he used was he interpreted his job was to support the administration's position on the war in Iraq. That's what he said. It's word for word. And I think if you Google the word interpretation, you'd probably find it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty damning.
Well, really, if you take a look at what Crocker and Petraeus didn't say, it is stunning. Because yeah. Crocker in particular took great pains to make no specific predictions about when things are going to stabilize and when the dysfunction that he described might start to ebb.
Right. But I thought this statement totally tainted everything that he said to the Senate.
Well, Richard, tell me what you think the Democrats ought to do.
God, everything they could. You know, stand up and fight. Along with everybody else, I'm just so tired of waiting for something. Although in this morning's paper, they talked about trying to take little steps, and I suppose with Bush's power to veto, there's not a lot they can do, you know, in spite of all of our, you know, wishing that they could. But perhaps if they can take some little steps and make some progress, that'll work out in a long way and perhaps get some of the Republicans to come along with them and, you know, protect their own skins in the future election.
Richard, I think you're very wise because, like many people, I would like to see powerful grandstanding by the Democrats who just say, no, no, no. But we know that they don't have the votes. You need 67 to beat a veto in the Senate.
Exactly.
And those votes are not there. We're inching up towards 60 now on the Webb bill, which would require troops to be in the U.S. for as long as they are deployed overseas. And that's kind of a backdoor way of limiting the president's hand. And that's now up to, by an amateur count, somewhere around 57 or 58 votes. So just a couple more Republicans could help put that one over. That might be a tipping point. We'll have to wait and see. Richard, thanks for the call. I hope your doctor's appointment goes well. Let's go to Buffalo now. Dave's on the line. Thanks for your call, Dave. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks, Peter. Hey, what's the likelihood the U.S. could pull off an oil-sharing agreement after bombing Iran, and might that be a reason why we haven't bombed Iran?
Well, I'm not sure the two issues are that intricately linked, but what I would say is the oil-sharing agreement, we have to define our terms here, because the oil-sharing agreement proposed by the Kaine-Hamilton Commission and generally embraced by Republicans and Democrats alike is not a good deal long-term for the Iraqis. It really permits exploitation of their natural resources by multinational oil companies. So in terms of a domestic oil-sharing agreement among the Iraqis, I certainly would like to see them work that out. But first, they need to establish their sovereignty over their carbon resources, as we call the oil in the ground there.
I agree, but doesn't it become a much difficult or a harder job for the U.S. if we end up bombing Iran, though?
I think bombing Iran makes no sense whatsoever. So you're correct that anything that we hope to achieve, even if it's a misguided goal of Dick Cheney, is going to be seriously complicated, if not compromised, by any military action against Iran.
Could Iraq actually defend Iran by not signing the oil sharing agreement then and putting kind of a stopper to it, saying, we're not going to sign this, we're kind of blow it all off, and we kind of know that you'd like us to sign it, but as soon as we do, you have more of a reason to do it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting thought. Let me think about that, Dave. I appreciate the call today. All right, nice to hear from you in beautiful Buffalo, New York. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Tom Hartman program. Tom is on his way to Germany for a conference sponsored by Salem International, a relief organization he's worked with for many years. Laura Flanders will be here tomorrow, Sam Cedar on Monday. Today it's me, Peter B. Collins from San Francisco.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio. Hartman Program, Viagra for your brain. This is Air America Radio.
It's rare that you hear this, but Tom Hartman has the day off today, tomorrow, and Monday. I'm sitting in today. My name's Peter B. Collins, and I'm based in San Francisco. My email is peter@peterbcollins.com. Feel free to drop me a note now or after the program. I'll be delighted to hear from you. We're taking your calls toll-free at 866-303-2270. Back to the phones here momentarily. I want to bring in Brad Friedman, my man from bradblog.com. He's my go-to guy related to voting issues and election integrity in this country. Brad, welcome to the Tom Hartman program today.
Thanks, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and if I were Tom Hartman, I'd say, but I'll get better.
Hey, no, thanks. You're my go-to guy. Thanks for asking Jim McDermott in the previous hour about the Holt bill and where he stands. I wish that, boy, frankly, I wish more journalists were out there when they had the opportunity to talk with these Congress folks and these presidential candidates where they stand on election reform, because it is, as Tom likes to call it, the heartbeat of democracy. And it's incredible, really, how the media is continues, frankly, to ignore this issue and not hold some of these legislators, hold their feet to the fire and find out where they stand on this. And frankly, find out if they even understand the difference between a paper trail and a paper ballot. It's quite extraordinary, the lack of information out there. and the lack of understanding that even our elected representatives seem to have about this issue.
Well, Brad, and I'm a big fan of Jim McDermott. I have great respect for him. But honestly, I was a little disappointed that he's not familiar with the details of the Holt bill in its current form and didn't appear to know about the Davis proposed amendment that could go a long way toward fixing, although it wouldn't make it a perfect bill.
Right. It is disappointing, but I think that a lot of people have put their faith in Rush Holt. They think he is quite literally a rocket scientist, so he must understand these things. But the fact is, he doesn't. And you know, I worked on the Holt bill originally, H.R. 811, before it was introduced. So I worked with their office, and it took me many, many months, frankly, before I was willing to come out and say, you know what? Rush Holt is out there, and he is lying about this election reform bill. And I don't like saying it, but that is a fact. After California Secretary of State Deborah Bowen recently came out with her top-to-bottom review showing that touchscreen DRE voting systems are not safe at any speed, and a paper trail on these touchscreens does absolutely nothing to protect us against election fraud, Rush Holt then came out and said, that's why you need to pass my bill, because it requires paper ballots for every voter in 2008. It does not require paper ballots for every voter in 2008. And unfortunately, a lot of the usually good progressive groups out there have either been fooled or are allowing themselves to be fooled. Move On, People for the American Way, Common Cause, even Verified Voting are out there saying, let's pass 811. And the fact is, they all know that it will not only allow these god-awful touchscreen DRE voting machines to continue, but it will institutionalize them for years to come, which is why it's so important to do something about this right now, to call your members and tell them, look, you have to have the guts here to ban DRE touchscreen voting machines. And finally, as you mentioned, Susan Davis last week had the guts to introduce an amendment to Holt's bill. We don't even know if her amendment will be allowed to be added to the bill or even voted on. But I think the difference here is going to be people calling their Congress member and demanding a DRE ban. When Susan Davis introduced this last week, she sent a statement to Bradblog.com saying, look, this is the 800-pound gorilla in Congress, the thing that nobody wants to talk about, the question of whether we should ban these DRE touchscreens at all. And yet everywhere they go, and I hear this from a lot of members, by the way, everywhere they go, they are asked by the people, not the media, but by the people about these things, about touchscreen voting, and whether we're going to get rid of it altogether. And yet no one in Congress is talking about it until now. Mm-hmm. And that was Susan Davis also, by the way, was helped. She announced her interest in this amendment on Wednesday, and then on Thursday, finally, the New York Times came out with an editorial that spoke to this quite directly.
Indeed.
Saying that it's unfortunate that the Holt bill does not contain a provision banning the use of touchscreen voting machines. They say there is still time before the bill becomes law to add a ban on touchscreen voting. And while there have been calls for putting a solution off until 2012, that is too long to wait.
It sure is. Now, Brad, the current situation is that the bill is stuck in the Rules Committee. Democrat Louise Slaughter of upstate New York chairs that committee. She's a bright, progressive legislator, and I would encourage listeners to contact her office and let her know that if the Holt bill leaves that committee, we want it to be amendable. And you explained at Brad Blog, and people can find the information there, that the Rules Committee has three choices. They can kill it, they can put it out on the floor with no amendments, or with limited amendments approved by the leadership. And so I would like to see the bill, if it leaves the committee, be amendable, and if it doesn't leave the committee, then it should die, and they should start over again in the next year.
Well, that's right. And, you know, one of the things that Jim McDermott had said was, oh, he's worried that there's not, or he hears from elections officials that there's not time to do something by 08. That is another one of the lies, along with the idea that there's no support in Congress for a DRE ban. You know, every single jurisdiction in the country currently uses paper ballots. usually optical scan ballots. This is for absentee balloting. Every single one of them. So if they wanted to, you could ban DREs today, and every jurisdiction in the country tomorrow could run an election with paper ballots, a paper ballot for every vote cast. So, you know, the propaganda is winning here. It is an uphill battle, so to speak, but the trajectory is not too not too steep. But it's going to take the people stepping in and making the difference here. You can call your congressperson at 800-839-5276. That's 800-839-5276. That is the switchboard for the U.S. Congress. Ask to talk to your congressmember. Ask to talk to Louise Slaughter. And allow, demand that if this bill moves forward, it is allowed to have amendments such as Susan Davis's, which, by the way, doesn't even call for the ban as it's currently drafted until 2012, which is too long, in my opinion. But at least, as she said, the conversation is now back on the table, if you will, or on the table for the first time, about whether we're going to allow these touchscreen machines. All the people know that, you know, this is a disastrous system, and we've got to get rid of these touchscreen machines. But as usual, the media and Congress don't seem to get it yet. So we've got to bang that drum.
The New York Times editorial you cited is very significant, Brad, because they have not taken a strong interest in these issues over the past few years, and in many cases have been dismissive of those of us who thought that the elections in Ohio in 2004 and in Florida in 2000 were hijacked, if not stolen.
Well, that's right. And they've been calling us conspiracy theorists. I remember AP referred to folks like me as dissidents, which is, I guess, one step away from insurgent at this point. But so it was significant when the New York Times, very mainstream outlet, obviously said it is time. Enough is enough. Ban these machines. So that was very significant, and I hope that it will change the discussion and the debate on this in D.C. But again, you know, one of the many downsides of this whole Iraq debacle is that everything else really is getting ignored. And we've got a mess far beyond Iraq, and we're having trouble focusing on it just because Iraq is, causing so much trouble. Importantly so. We've
sure.
got to focus on that. But beneath the scenes, you know, this electoral system, it is the heartbeat of democracy. It is why we are in this mess. And if we don't deal with this issue now and get it right, we're talking about messes like Iraq and beyond for decades to come. If nothing else, we've got to get this one right, Peter.
Absolutely. Brad, thanks for your passion and for your hard work.
Thank you, sir. Always good to talk to you.
All right. Visit the website bradblog.com and read all about it. And then get active. Call that toll-free number, 800-839-5276, and let your congressional member know how you feel. We're going to take a break and return here on the Tom Hartman Program. All the lines are jammed, but when we take another call, you can check in at 866-303-2270. My email, peter@peterbcollins.com.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
Thanks for joining us today on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins, and I'm glad you're listening. Got a stack of phone calls here, and I feel bad when people wait on hold almost forever. David in San Francisco, I hope you've been patient. If not, your turn is up. Welcome to the program today, David.
Hey, hi to Peter. Good to hear you covering in for Tom. I don't know if you're aware, but when the death of Pete Wilson happened a while back, KGO is needing to look for another host, so I hope you've put in over there.
I already got the gentle turn-down call, but thank you, David. I appreciate you thinking of me.
Well, you know, we got to keep the heat up. Hey, you know, I was interested in Petraeus, and I don't know if you've been keeping up with the missing weapons issue about Petraeus. If you just do a basic Google search of missing weapons Iraq, you're going to find a bunch of stories about missing AK-47s and machine pistols and all sorts of stuff. And it totals to just short of 200,000 guns. And the story has been around for many months, but only in June did it start to emerge that Petraeus was the guy that was responsible for the missing weapons. So it's one of these issues that if Petraeus was responsible for these missing weapons, then the idea that he would have a vested interest in since his job is to help drag the war on, I'm looking specifically at this issue of whether or not Petraeus is more of a saboteur than he is a loyal patriotic American. If he was responsible for the serial numbers for these guns, and he just, gosh darn it, forgot to get the serial numbers for 110,000 AK-47s mm-hmm. and 80,000 Glocks and machine pistols and body armor and helmets and uniforms, then that means that these things have disappeared into Iraq and people could simulate being U.S. Forces or Iraqi troops and go mm-hmm. out on death spree splurges.
Well, David, I take your point, and keep in mind that Republicans do not believe in amnesty for undocumented immigrants, but they believe in complete amnesty for the appointed officials and the elected officials of the Bush administration. And so we now have the NSA bill that legalized the domestic wiretapping and eavesdropping programs and immunized those who consciously broke the law to implement it in the first place. And we've had no accountability for the blunders in Iraq. Jerry Bremer got the Medal of Freedom, as did George Tenet. And as I mentioned earlier today, Zalmay Khalilzad is the man who's responsible for what Ambassador Crocker honestly refers to as the truly horrendous year of 2006. And he got promoted to the United Nations. The guy before him was John Negroponte, who got promoted to intelligence czar and now is the Deputy Secretary of State. As I mentioned, he is in Pakistan right now, kissing up to General Musharraf. So there is a whole pattern here of the serious missteps and blunders have resulted in absolutely no accountability. We can't even bring ourselves to name the names of those responsible. Thank you, David. Now to Darlene, north of the border in Edmonton, Ontario. Thanks for calling the Tom Hartman program, Darlene.
Yeah, actually, I don't call radio programs very often. I listen all the time, but it's Edmonton, Alberta.
Okay.
But I'm really confused. I hear everyone talking about the magical 67 votes and why they can't do anything because they don't have the votes. I listened to Dennis Kucinich yesterday for 3 hours, and mm-hmm. I consider him to be a brilliant man. And he said that you can end the war by simply not sending a bill. Just don't send a bill, you know, because then the votes don't matter.
Darlene, Dennis has it correct. The issue is that any appropriation bill must originate in the House. If the House doesn't send a bill, the money cannot be used.
Yeah, so don't fund the war, because I can't feel sorry for Congress, you know, that woe is me, we can't do anything. I mean, to allow this to go on for another year with at least 60 people dying, Americans, every month, not mm-hmm. counting all the Iraqis, not counting all the maimed. People are dying every minute. Stop funding the illegal occupation. Just don't send anything. Obviously, Bush is going to veto anything. Don't give him the opportunity.
Darlene,
stop the money.
Darlene, can I sponsor you for U.S. citizenship, and can we get you here to vote in time for the 08 election?
Yeah, I'm just so frustrated.
Well, you understand how our system works better than the people who are there supposed to run it. Thanks for your call. Now to Dave and Eureka. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the Tom Hartman program. Let's see. Dave's on line 9. Go ahead, Dave. We got you now.
That was an excellent call there. And I so much have been agreeing with you, with Brad, with Congressman McDermott. An excellent show. I sometimes feel the need, as you know, to remind people that there is nothing whatsoever legitimate about this war. It's all for profits, for big corporate special interests, and for that reason alone, they should be prosecuted. Thank you.
Okay, Dave, you made the point succinctly. Thank you very much. We do need accountability here, and we do need to hold these people, even if it's only rhetorical accountability. I'm very frustrated that the Democrats are pulling back on the Rove investigation, the contempt of Congress of Rove and Gonzalez in the U.S. Attorney's case. Henry Waxman apparently has been instructed not to demand testimony from Condoleezza Rice. And John Conyers is being instructed not to proceed with things that might lead up to impeachment. Come on, Democrats. Let's fight fair and fight hard and fight to the finish. That's the way the other side does it. I'm Peter B. Collins for Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
866-303-2270. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program today. Tom is taking a rare couple of days off. He's traveling to Germany for a conference sponsored by Salem International, a relief organization that he and Louise have worked with for many years. I'm Peter B. Collins from San Francisco, sitting in for Tom today. Laura Flanders will be your substitute host tomorrow, Sam Cedar on Monday, and then Tom will be back in the chair on Tuesday as usual. Our toll-free number is 866-303-2270. My personal email is peter@peterbcollins.com, or if you don't like what I say, try bigmouth@peterbcollins.com. It'll get my attention. Norman Solomon joins me now. He is a media critic and author, now a movie star of some dimensions, and he's been a longtime analyst and critic of the U.S. media and its role in promoting the various wars of our government. His newest book is just published, called Made Love, Got War, and his previous book, War Made Easy, has been made into a documentary that is now in movie houses across the country, and it's narrated by Sean Penn. It's a very powerful, powerful piece. Norman, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program today.
Hey, thanks, Peter.
My pleasure. Now, given your history of really taking a critical look at the media's role in promoting some of the wars of our country, give us your sense of how the media colluded, collaborated, or failed us as the American people in this episode of the Petraeus Report and the build-up, the dramatic theatrical build-up to it.
I think we've really got a repetitive compulsion disorder, and we can see that in the people in the White House and the Pentagon. They based on lies an illegal war on Iraq, and now they're laying the agenda, and this week was part of that, for it looks like probably an air attack on Iran. But the media are part of it, too. And you would think at this point, after so many times of the same two-step, the same nonsense and spin techniques, that the news media would be in a sustained, I guess you would say, skeptical mode. But I don't think so. As a matter of fact, if you looked at the National Press Club appearance of General Petraeus yesterday, and you know there he was again, third day in a row in the nation's capital, chest full of medals, bureaucraties talk as though he were some kind of humanistic entrepreneur in Iraq instead of somebody overseeing this invasion. And they did everything, frankly, Peter, but kiss the guy's feet and shine his shoes.
Well, there's been very little electronic media notice of the way they foisted the Petraeus Crocker report on the American public right around the time of 9/11. And that, of course, was buttressed by the ad campaign that Ari Fleischer and the Swiftboat types have been running, which, of course, uses a very gripping visual of an Iraqi veteran who lost his legs, who is arguing that they attacked us. And at the point he says that, we see in a political commercial the Twin Towers burning.
Yeah.
And this is, again, a misappropriation of the truth and a very cynical way of manipulating at least a portion of the American public into once again believing that somehow the war in Iraq was a necessary response to 9/11.
There are so many ways to tell a lie, and the visual juxtaposition and the timing, very methodical. The networks on Tuesday were cutting back and forth from the hearing room in the Senate and ceremonies in Pennsylvania and New York marking this crime against humanity, which we call 9/11, as though what's happening now in Iraq, courtesy of U.S. taxpayers, is not also a crime against humanity, which it is. And, you know, it is a sort of a ugly, horrible, not only from the government and media standpoint, repetition compulsion disorder, but for those of us who are revolted by and revolt against this warfare state, this is a flashback to 40 years ago. The country's different, the circumstances vary, but this is very similar to Vietnam in terms of the propaganda techniques here at home.
Yeah. And there's some interesting new language introduced into the lexicon. The general can't bring himself to use the term civil war that we all understand is a very simple, direct form of rhetoric. It is referred to as ethno-sectarian competition for power and resources, although the ambassador referred to it as a street fight.
Yeah, right. And when he wasn't spinning out this 18-syllable phrase that is really not only a tongue twister but also indicates how convoluted the euphemisms are. There was a lot of talk from Crocker as well the last couple of days about how if the United States doesn't consolidate its purported gains in Iraq, that the country will slip into a civil war as though it were not taking place right now. And, you know, when I think about Petraeus and Crocker, I think of how they have been made into sort of a Benson and Hedges combination. Jim Lehrer a couple of days ago was so fascinated when he interviewed them both Tuesday evening. He kept saying at the end of the interview, Petraeus and Crocker, Crocker and Petraeus. He was quite taken with it.
Yeah.
He had not served up even softball questions to them. It was more like beach ball questions. And frankly, Peter, I think we have a quicker way to say Petraeus and Crocker. It would just be Pet Croc.
Well, Maureen Dowd pointed out that General Petraeus, as a young man, had the family nickname of Peaches. So we could work something out with Peaches and Cream or Peaches and Crocker. I don't know.
Well, I have to say, I think when it comes to violence and overseeing it, there's a lot of creaming going on in high places.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll work with that one. Karen in Washington State emailed, my favorite phrase of the Petraeus testimony was in reference to losses in Iraq. He acknowledged some strain on troops and high-demand, low-density assets. I think there must be a contest between these guys and Bush to see who can use the most evasive language. Thank you, Karen.
Yeah, it's very well put, and it reminds me, Petraeus at the hearing said at one point when he was pressed by a senator from New Jersey that his family had also sacrificed. He's been in this work for 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah. And Norman Solomon, one of the other things that I think is really important for people to note is that whenever General Petraeus refers to any enemy of the U.S. and, I guess, by proxy, our Iraqi government there, they are referred to as al-Qaeda. And I have been pointing out today that in the powerful op-ed written by 7 non-commissioned officers, 2 of whom died on Monday, the piece called The War as We Saw It, they describe the actors as Sunni extremists, some al-Qaeda terrorists. Congressman McDermott told us it's under 5%, maybe even under 2% related to al-Qaeda. The soldiers also talk about Shia militiamen, criminals, armed tribes. We know about the forces of Muqtada al-Sadr. Yet when Petraeus talks about the enemy, it's always al-Qaeda.
Yes, and even the Pentagon's own statistics, going back to the attacks on Fallujah, the captured what are called enemies, well over 90% of them, even according to the Pentagon, are indigenous Iraqi people. And it's quite notable that we have every day a stream of press material I get from the Pentagon, the Air Force. Anybody who the United States is fighting, not only are they prone to call these people terrorists, but they are also called officially anti-Iraqi forces, even though they are Iraqis.
I shouldn't laugh, but I have to.
Hey, if we get with the program, we speak that way, there's a cushy job waiting for us in the PR department at the Pentagon.
Really? I could be the next Armstrong Williams?
You could.
Wow. All right, Norman, tell people how they can get information and perhaps their own copy of the documentary film War Made Easy.
People can go to the web and pick it up, get the transcript, get hold of the DVD, and it's warmadeeasythemovie.org.
Themovie.org. Great. And are you on any big screens right now that you want to mention?
Well, it's still in San Francisco at the Roxy, and also a lot of small screens. You know, this is a grassroots organizing thing. People are showing in churches, union halls, schools across the country, public libraries, War Made Easy on DVD.
All right. Very good, sir. Well, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your comments.
Thank you, Peter.
Norman Solomon, his new book is called Made Love, Got War. And visit the website warmadeeasythemovie.org for more information about the documentary. It looks like we have a contrarian on the line, Paula, in Morristown, New Jersey. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter
Hi.
B.
Hello.
Hello, Paula.
Yes, hi. I called to say, in response to your and your guests talking about the terrible news reports and the media and what a bad job they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You ought to listen to Air America's own news. It's awful.
Mm-hmm. Why do you say that? What do you criticize? What do you find that you don't like?
It just repeats the same old garbage that all the other news outlets repeat. I just listened to, I guess it was the 1 o'clock news report,
mm-hmm.
and the newsreader said, President Bush is promising to bring home 30,000 troops. We will see if there's a real troop reduction. That was it. Nothing about it. The same 30,000 that went during the surge. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just the same old garbage.
Well, I did not hear that newscast, Paula. I'm remote here in San Francisco, so
yes, I
can't comment on that. But I have to tell you that when I listen to Air America, I hear some pretty clear commentary, some good information, and a lot of strong opinion. So
absolutely. I am not criticizing the program.
Mm-hmm.
My criticism is strictly about the news breaks. I love the programs. I love Air America. But
okay.
The news breaks are terrible, awful garbage. That's all I wanted to say.
All right. You've got an opinion, and I'm glad you shared it. Thank you very much. Now to Tom in Los Angeles as we jump to the other coast. Tom, give me a quick comment. I got about 20 seconds. Okay, we're not picking him up. We don't have time. I've been overruled. It's happened before. 45 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins, sitting in for Tom. Grab a line now. There's one open at 866-303-2270.
The Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire.
The vocal stylings of the late, great Johnny Cash. Here on the Tom Hartman Program, I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. Glad to be with you today. Laura Flanders will sit in for Tom tomorrow, Sam Cedar on Monday, and Tom will be back with you on Tuesday. You know, when you do a live radio show, sometimes things go sideways. First of all, I need to tell you that we gave out an incorrect toll-free number to call Capitol Hill earlier this hour. We were talking with Brad Friedman, and he spit out a number, and it turns out when you try it, it is not actually the sex talk line, but it gives you a number to get a sex talk line. And I think that's actually a private service for Senator Vitter from Louisiana. But you should call the congressional toll-free number 800-828-0498. I'll repeat that. 800-828-0498 and ask to be connected to the congressperson of your choice. One more time. 800-828-0498. And I do apologize for anybody who called and was offended by the sex line. Come on.
Excuse me.
Oh, and as long as we're apologizing, Brian, you're right. He emailed Peter, you just went to a break calling on Dems to fight fair, fight hard, and fight to the end. That's the way the other side does it. However, I think it's becoming more and more clear that the fight fair part is not put into play by the other side except for appearances. You're absolutely right, Brian. And here's a fight that Harry Reid seems to be itching for. He's made it clear. Ted Olson will not be confirmed by the Senate if he is nominated to replace Alberto Gonzalez as Attorney General. You give him hell, Harry, because this is the kind of strong position the Democrats need to take. We were too easy on Gates' confirmation as Secretary of Defense. We should have filibustered the Alito and Roberts nominations to the Supreme Court, even if we didn't prevail, to make the point. And so I think this is a critical line that is being drawn. But what I'd like to see is that the Senate leadership give Pat Leahy permission to proceed with the contempt of Congress over the U.S. attorney's issues, the investigation into all those missing emails that Karl Rove wrote, not on the White House account as required by law, but on private servers controlled by the Republican National Committee. We need to know these things. And I can't believe that the Democrats are pushing those off the table right now. Keep the pressure on, will you please? I would appreciate that. Let's see. I promised Tom in Los Angeles he'd be next. Hello, Tom. You're on the air on the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing today?
Okay, thanks.
Great. What I wanted to talk about, Peter, is the fact that I think that we as Americans are losing the communication game. What I mean by that is Bush throws out a word, and the word gets used by the media. The word gets used by ourselves. Just as an example, the word surge. The word surge means moving ahead. The word surge is a positive word. And for some reason, we've all adopted that word into our communication about what's going on, when really and truly, it's an increase in troops. And I think what we need to do is we need to start communicating properly instead of just using a buzzword that someone else has thought of or has shown, that we got to start using our communication properly. Just like, you know, they've made it where they call it the abortion issue. It's not the abortion issue. It's a woman's right to choose issue.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone has gotten caught in this culture of just repeating what was already said. I don't know how you feel about that. But
oh, I feel very strongly about it, and I'm glad you raised it. Have you ever heard there's a bad radio commercial? I'm not sure if it's still running. It's for some audio tape program called Verbal Advantage. It helps you expand your vocabulary. And the announcer comes on and says, "People do judge you by the words you use." Well, that can't be commercial aside. There's an important message there. And
absolutely,
we repeatedly see the Democrats, Jack Reed, the senator from Rhode Island, who's going to respond to the president's address tonight, continually uses the language and framing of the administration to try to define the positions of the Democrats. And it's just wrong. We see Democrats who use the framing and language to talk about protecting the troops. The money that's been appropriated for Iraq has diddly to do with protecting the troops or keeping our troops safe or well-equipped. And we need to be very vigilant about the language used. And one other example that I've heard Jack Reed use, he talks about withdrawal, and he'll use the term precipitous. And even if he's denying that the proposed redeployment that Democrats put forward is precipitous or a withdrawal, he should never use that word.
Absolutely. In fact, Peter, I think the big thing is that, you know, just like, why don't we turn it around instead of saying, you know, support the troops, we should be saying save the soldiers.
Yeah.
Or we should change it around in terms of making it where they don't have the high ground on every communications term that comes out. I mean, I even hear ourselves saying it on even Air America and stuff. I know we don't mean to, but, you know, we say the surge.
I think we need to have rhetoric police here just to sound a little alarm when we cross the line. Thank you, Tom. And, of course, George Lakoff has done a lot of great work. And Jeffrey Feldman, who is often on the Tom Hartman program, frameshopisopen.com, does a good job on those issues. David in Santa Cruz, thanks for holding. You're next on the Tom Hartman program.
Peter, thanks for setting in for Tom.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Last week, there was allegedly an event happened with the U.S. Air Force flying nuclear devices from North Dakota to New Orleans. However,
right,
apparently the route, there's more than one route, and the route actually went over southeastern Nevada and northeastern Arizona. Currently, there's a U.S. Air Force general involved in the search for Steve. They claimed four of these nuclear arms were delivered to New Orleans. But if you look at the photos, they come in tripod pylons with three each. There's six, and they were mounted under the wings, not in a fuselage. So what I'm concerned about, is there a situation of a broken arrow in Nevada and Arizona right now being covered up? They have watercraft with sonar equipped looking for these things, even in lakes. So the FEMA wanted, or saying they were training for a terror attack. They were training for a Class 5 hurricane and an earthquake in California.
Right.
And they've been wanting a pretext to go into Iran for a long time. And what I'm afraid of is that U.S. General Kevin Burns is not around to stop U.S. Air Force training exercises that may be designed to go live.
David, I got to take a break. This is an important issue. I'm glad you brought it up. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio. Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
And this is the Tom Hartman Program. Tom has the day off. He'll be back with you next Tuesday. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. Delighted to be sitting in for Tom again. And we're taking your calls toll-free at 866-303-2270. My email crashed, but we got a backup during the break here. Thanks for all your notes. Send them along to Peter at peterbcollins.com. And here's a fighting Democrat. Paula in Des Moines writes, "Hey, Peter, you asked a little bit ago, what should the Dems do to change the course of the mess in Iraq? Well, here's the answer. Let the Republicans filibuster. Let them stand in front of a mic and look into the camera and tell C-SPAN all the reasons the American people should support this criminal administration in its resource grab of Iraq's oil. Let them drone on for hours on end about how much they love George W. Bush and his moronic pursuit of power at any price. Be sure to encourage them to speak clearly and preferably in 30-second increments. Then use all those sound bites in Democratic campaign ads in 2008. Put those criminals on a continuous loop for the entire 08 campaign season to remind their constituents of just who these crooks really are. I'm sick and tired of playing nice with people who consider nice just another four-letter word. It's time to take off the gloves and play hardball with bowling balls." That's a kind of a testosterone-rich email from a nice lady named Paula. Thank you, Paula. And here's one from Herb in Sebastopol, California, just a few clicks up the highway from me. It reads, "Republicans and right-wing talkers have been quick to criticize anybody who attacks General Petraeus, calling him a great soldier and a hero." Yeah, in fact, by accident, I turned on Sean Hannity on the radio the other day, and I learned that I am a snot-nosed liberal for having the temerity to question the spin job coming out of General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker. Anyway, Herb goes on. "I looked up Petraeus' record and found out that he's a career military person who's not done many heroic things, although he won a Bronze Star for something he's not that's not pointed out in his bio. John Kerry was more of a hero, and look what the Swift Boat veterans did to him. And what about John McCain being called a hero? He was shot down and he became a prisoner of war, and he himself says that was not too heroic." Well, it's hardly heroic what John McCain has done running for president in this cycle. Cliff Schechter joins us now. He's an activist and a blogger. He's got a zippy new blog we'll tell you about. And he was the proprietor of TheRealMcCain.com, which was taking a hard look at the McCain candidacy until, well, it was no longer necessary. And Fred Thompson just showed up in his first poll as an announced candidate and jumped right into a second-place tie with John McCain at 18%, Rudy Giuliani polling about 26%. Cliff, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Peter?
Nice to talk with you, and thanks for joining us. Now, let's start off with McCain here. You heard the comment from Herb in Sebastopol, and I think many people are surprised at just how weakly he is performing this year and how he's being eclipsed by people who are hardly conservative, like Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's these guys, what a collection. They're almost like a clown troupe at a circus, you know. I think the bigger issue that McCain is doing so badly, you know, is look at who he's up against. I mean, you can't find among the four top guys, if you want to call them that, I think every single one of them has flip-flopped on what used to be a core issue on the right, which is abortion. On numerous other issues, you can find where they've been here, they've been there, they've zigged, they've zagged. So I would be even more disappointed, frankly, because if there were really a good candidate among the bunch, then, you know, one could understand why he's done so poorly. But in the end, it really is much closer to the fact that he abandoned everything he claimed to stand for in 2000 and took up the mantle of Bush and the right. And most people with common sense would realize that's not a very smart place to be.
Well, doesn't he see the polls that even Republicans are disaffected with the president, don't believe him on the war, and that, you know, it's simply a bad bet for John McCain to double down in his support of Bush's misadventure in Iraq?
You'd think so. And you'd think that a guy that came out publicly and said in cases such as Beirut in 1983 and Somalia and Haiti and a variety of other interventions that it was not a place for America to be. In fact, in the first Gulf War, came out and said that we wouldn't even entertain trading American for Iraqi blood. Of course, that was only a few months before he voted for the war resolution, typical McCain. But you know, he was a guy in the past who was very skeptical, at least in word, of interventions. And now suddenly he's the biggest, well, not the biggest, I'd say tied with Mitch McConnell and Joe Lieberman up there with the administration, guys who are pushing this ridiculous war. So I can only say it's really, he's also shown throughout his career stubbornness that when people tell him he's wrong, he's that much more determined to tell them he's right.
Yeah.
It's sad that his personal psychology has to play out on a stage where innocent people get killed, but sadly that's our political process, isn't it?
Yeah. Cliff Schechter is with us here on the Tom Hartman program. And, Cliff, I'm looking at your zippy new blog. You moved over. You've joined Robert Greenwald and the team at Brave New Films. And we're going to talk about the new piece about Rudy Giuliani in a moment. But I'm distracted by your blog here and the big news story about Jeff Gannon.
Yeah, it was actually funny. Another Air America show, the Young Turks, he went on and was interviewed and said that he was not a gay male escort, and, you know, tried to make that denial, and then claimed when he was pushed on it, he really said, well, it's my personal life, you know, and I find it funny that he hangs out with the likes of Tom DeLay, or at least he used to, who have no problem delving into my personal life.
But didn't he have a website like militarystuds.com or something like that?
Matt, you remembered exactly, Peter. I'm impressed. I hope you weren't going there too often.
Well, it's in my browser.
Of course. We all save it, you know. It's definitely under my favorites. you know, yeah, he did. So, you know, it's not only that what he's saying is patently ridiculous, and we all know the truth, but it's also the fact that when these guys start crying about it's their personal lives, well, no, actually, guys like you are the ones who have made, turned prostitution into a crime where people can spend all sorts of enormous time in jail. So, if that's your belief, then you're going to support right-wingers that support those policies. Well, you engaged in prostitution. Therefore, it's not your personal life, pal. It's a crime.
Yeah.
You know, but they never see it that way when it's their own lives, only when it's everybody else's, of course.
Well, and another hooker has surfaced to allege that she serviced David Vitter, the senator from Louisiana, for a lengthy period of time. And so far, we haven't seen any real calls for his resignation from Republicans. And the Ethics Committee, well, I guess they're busy having lunch or something.
Exactly. Yeah. No, with David Vitter, you have to be impressed almost because he was with that particular hooker for 4 months, which you could call a commitment.
Now, Cliff, I want to direct people to your new blog. It's Cliff Schechter. We got to spell it for you. You know how to spell Cliff. S-C-H-E-C-T-E-R. CliffSchechter.BraveNewFilms.org. And you've got videos here. It's really beautifully graphically rich. And it is an active blog where people can post their comments to your rants.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I must give all credit to the Brave New Films crew and my fellow bloggers, all of whom are much smarter than I am. So,
well, let's talk about the latest output from Brave New Films, a seven-minute video that people can find at therealrudy.com. And it takes a hard look at the way Rudy Giuliani has tried to wrap himself in 9/11. In fact, we've heard people like Chris Matthews and Chuck Todd on MSNBC flatly declare that Rudy owns 9/11 as a political issue. I choke when I hear that. But this film is really powerful because it shows that when Rudy was, you know, the field marshal on the streets of Lower Manhattan on 9/11, the real reason he was out on the streets was that his command post was not available because it was in the World Trade Center against the advice of top officials when he cited it there.
Yeah, it's really a despicable story and one that's really brought out, I think, much better in video, with how video can show the emotion of those who were impacted by his selfish decision. In the end, what we show in this video, about 7 minutes, we interview firefighters who, you know, we interview families who lost firefighters. We interview his former, one of his former aides who warned him in no uncertain terms to not put the command center and the World Trade Center, after all, had been hit in 1993, the only place that had been hit by foreign terrorists in New York, and they had sworn that they were going to come back to the World Trade Center. So everybody said, put it underground in Brooklyn, including his top security advisors, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
What really Giuliani did is he wanted something in walking distance from the City Hall, because it had to be convenient to him, a place where the press could gather. I know that'll shock you that he wants that press considerations would ever come to play. And additionally, the space was owned by a large Republican contributor, which will shock you too. So all those reasons, he ignored everybody, and I mean everybody's advice, put this in World Trade Center Tower number 7, which, as people know, came down that day. And that's why you saw him walking around covered in soot and everything, because he wasn't where he should have been, which is in a safe command center, saving people's lives. Instead, he was out, like everybody else on the street, mixed up, not knowing where he was going, and people were killed because of it. And the fact that this man was turned into a hero and has chosen to exploit that day for his own financial gain to the tune of $100,000 a speech, and now a presidential campaign, it's sickening. And people should just watch the video, because frankly, it speaks for itself. You'll see what people who lost loved ones have to say about it.
And this mini-doc delivers the coup de grace, as Steely Dan would put it, in that Rudy Giuliani was the beneficiary of a $100,000 fundraiser on the yacht of Larry Silverstein, the guy who signed the lease to put the command center in Building 7 at the World Trade Center. Cliff Schechter, thanks for joining us. Visit cliffschechter.bravenewfilms.org. Your calls and comments coming up next on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Tom Hartman radio program. Tom's got the day off. He's on his way to Germany for a conference. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco, where skies are clear and we can see for miles today. I'm going to thank all the people on hold. I'm going to get to as many calls as I can before the end of the hour at 866-303-2270. Ed in Arlington, Washington. Join us. You're on the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Peter B. You're doing a great job.
Well, thank you. It's what I love to do.
Oh, yeah, you're good at it. Anyhow, I get two things. Number one, we've got to keep in mind that everything that General Petraeus says, you could just throw it right out the window because he was not sworn.
You know, you make a very important point, Ed, and Ray McGovern is a former CIA officer who, in fact, was Robert Gates' boss when Gates was at the CIA back in the 1980s. And he is a retired CIA guy who was at the hearings in the House before Ike Skelton the other day on Monday.
Yeah.
And when the microphone failed, and they were fumbling to get that fixed, and there was kind of an awkward pregnant pause in the proceedings, Ray McGovern just blurted out, "Swear him in."
Yeah.
And he was ejected from the hearing room
because
of that.
Right, they ran him out.
But this is an important point because we have seen in the past that Republican chairs have declined to swear in people like, oh, Alberto Gonzalez, because he's a prevaricator and they didn't want him to prevaricate under oath. But here we had a situation where it appears that Ike Skelton consciously chose not to swear in General Petraeus. And I can only say, why, Ike? Why?
I know. That's it's just mind-boggling. And what makes one wonder, what the hell does Bush or Cheney or whatever, what do they have hanging over the heads of these guys that make them do their bidding?
Ed, give me your other points so I can move to another call.
Okay. Secondly, I keep hearing references to all these websites and everything and going to blogs, and I don't have a computer, but I remember back in the 60s when people got out in the streets and that's how the word was passed and everything.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I keep asking, where's the outrage? And I think the outrage is because people are talking on the Internet and they're not getting out in the street.
Well, Barbara Lee, the courageous congresswoman from Oakland, told me the other day that what she needs is street heat. There's a demonstration in Washington this weekend. There's another one scheduled for the end of the month. And if you can be there, I encourage you to get your feet on the street and give it a little heat. Thank you very much, Ed. We've got another Petraeus caller, Evelyn in North Carolina. Evelyn, welcome to the Tom, pardon me, the Tom Hartman program. It's Peter B.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
I read recently that David Petraeus was a two-star division commander in 2004, and now he's a four-star general. Are promotions that sudden normally, and how does that impact his retirement income?
I don't know the direct answers to those, but I think they're very good questions. We have seen that the jump, once you get one star or even two, the jump to four is usually a political decision. And so I don't know the mechanics there, but it's something I'll look into. And clearly, if you serve as a four-star general, your retirement benefits are going to be much better than if you had retired as a two-star.
And that's
one of the
time,
one of the issues here about General Taguba, who was charged with investigating the crimes at Abu Ghraib and then was drummed out of the service before a potential last promotion. So that's something to consider. Thank you, Evelyn. Now to Gail in San Francisco. Gail, thanks for calling. You're on the Tom Hartman program. We got Nathan in San Diego. Go ahead, Nathan. Oh, Nathan,
hello?
Are you there? Hi, Nathan.
Yeah
go
Hi,
ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, glad you guys are doing a radio show like this. I think you guys are giving out some great facts. I would like to say to everybody out there in America, think about all the things that are made out of oil and everything that we use as far as oil products every day.
Right.
And then I'd like to say every single one of you out there who uses those has voted for the war. It's basically a ballot that you signed. And, you know, every time we go to the pump, we check it again. And so what we need to do, I think, is find some source of a clean sheet power in order to not have to go to war like this again for energy resources.
All right. Well, I think you make a good point. It's something for people to strive for. There are alternative energies out there. People are working with plug-in hybrids now. Lots of people with home-brewed biofuels and using French fry vat leftovers. There are a lot of ways to power vehicles that don't require oil. Thanks for the comment. More of your calls in a moment here on the Tom Hartman program. It's Peter B. Collins sitting in today.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
866-303-2270. Tom Hartman program continues. Tom's away. I'm Peter B. Collins. Laura Flanders will sit in tomorrow. Sam Cedar on Monday. And then Tom will be back at you Tuesday as usual here on the Tom Hartman program. My toll-free number is 866-303-2270. 866-303-2270. So are you one of those people who is feeling the crunch or anticipating the crunch as your mortgage increases every month due to adjustable rate mortgages that you may have jumped into a couple of years ago on a no money down, we got to get you into the house of your dreams kind of basis. Well, the crunch is hitting, and it could get much worse. Carolyn Saeed is a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, and her front page story today describes efforts by borrowers who see themselves getting into trouble, who approach their lenders looking for a workout or some kind of a modification of the mortgage or a refi on a little bit better terms. Well, this is the promise we've heard from President Bush and from some of the lenders, and Carolyn's trying to find out if any of these promises are actually being activated. Thanks for joining us today, Carolyn Saeed.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me what you found when you contacted lenders like Wells Fargo and Chase and Washington Mutual. They've made public representations that they want to help their borrowers stay in their homes. Is this really happening?
Well, it's very difficult to tell. I mean, their CEOs have gone, testified in front of Congress and said in press interviews that their top priority is homeownership preservation and that they will work with borrowers. But they are not required to keep any kind of statistics or to disclose exactly what's happening on loan modification. And when we talk to the nonprofit housing counseling agencies who deal with thousands and thousands of these troubled borrowers, they all say it's extraordinarily difficult and extremely rare to have a lender be willing to make a loan modification.
And many borrowers are looking at a really frightening crunch, Carolyn, where the value of their home has leveled off or actually declined. The cost of their mortgage is going up. Their incomes haven't changed. And trying to get out either by selling the house or coming up with some creative refi mode is beyond the reach of many of these borrowers.
That is correct. You know, truth to tell, many of these borrowers, or at least a good number of them, probably shouldn't have been in those houses in the first place. It might not be that, not just that their income's not going up. It could have been that they misrepresented or whoever did their paperwork misrepresented their income in getting the mortgage in the first place. However, you know, there still are a number of them who, you know, really want to stay in their house, do have income, but they obviously, they can't pay an 11%, a 12%, a 13% monthly mortgage rate. They could pay a fixed 7% monthly mortgage rate, and that's what they're trying to get, and they're not able to get it.
And Carolyn, in your sidebar story, you profile some actual borrowers who are threatened with being, in the technical term, underwater.
Mm-hmm.
And this one family in Hercules, California, you described, is in a pickle because if they want to refinance, there's a $16,000 prepayment penalty on their existing mortgage. And again, their house is worth less than when they bought it, and they're facing an increase in that adjustable rate mortgage.
Right. Then, and the prepayment penalties are very common in subprime mortgages. And what the lenders would say to justify it is they took a risk on these people. You know, both that family and all the subprime lenders had very poor credit. And the lenders would say, well, you know, we need to make sure we're going to get at least 2 years of interest out of them. So we put this prepayment penalty in there. And, you know, some people who signed these papers were not aware that that these stringent terms were in there. You know, it is, you know, I'm sure it was written down in there somewhere, but it's in the fine print. The devil is in the details, and a lot of consumers are a little bit naive or unsophisticated and just aren't their own advocate and didn't really scrutinize the paperwork the way they should have.
And in another couple that you profile from Antioch, California, their situation is they borrowed from Countrywide, a company that has been in the news for its financial problems, and last week laid off 12,000, you know, more than half of its workforce, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in a catch-22 because Countrywide said, well, we can't help you until you miss a payment. And if he misses a payment, his credit will be ruined.
Right.
That will certainly go forward in a negative way.
That is an interesting catch-22. And I will tell you that particular catch-22 is in part the four mortgages that have been sold on Wall Street and turned into what's called securities, and they're actually,
right.
in this case, most likely Countrywide itself no longer owns the mortgage. There is a servicer who collects the money, and, you know, somebody on Wall Street owns the mortgage.
Yeah, it's a mortgage-backed security that's been bundled with other mortgages into a big package.
Right, and so it's a lot harder to take those apart. It's kind of like, you know, once you make your cake mix, taking one egg out of it, to take those apart and reform them. However, Congress is really gung-ho on the idea of loan modification because it is sort of a simpler way to, you know, it doesn't involve taxpayer bailout, and it's not as expensive as foreclosure, and doesn't have the, and obviously if people can stay in their homes, it doesn't have the devastating effects on neighborhoods and the economy that foreclosure would have. Mm-hmm. So Congress did a lot of work on this, or this summer, did a lot of hearings and testimony, and they pushed both the SEC and the FASB, the Financial Accounting Standards Board, to issue decisions saying that companies could modify loans before they were in default. There were some accounting and tax reasons that they couldn't modify them before they were in default, but now mm-hmm. they can. But that word might not have gotten out to all the companies out there.
So, Carolyn, are there any angel lenders out there who people who are facing this crunch can go to and refinance and really hold on to their homes?
How I wish somebody would call in and tell us how to work, but I don't know that. I mean, what people should do who have a problem, or well before they have a problem, they should contact their lender as soon as possible and say that, and see if there might be some kind of workout down the road. And they can also work with a community group. There's many good community groups that you know, that do this kind of work. The main one nationwide is NeighborWorks America. They have a number, 885-995-HOPE, and they offer free counseling over the phone, and they can also link you up. You can get linked up with a HUD-approved counseling agency in your own neighborhood and go in and talk to them for free, and those counselors will work with you and call the lender with you, because often the counselors have a better idea of, you know, what to do to get to somebody at the lender so you're not in an endless hold for hour after hour punching buttons trying to get to a live person. Nevertheless, the housing counseling agencies are saying they're not really succeeding in loan modifications, but they still might be able to help you get a little closer to pursuing a solution than if you go on your own.
Okay.
And it is very important to try to contact your lender before you miss a payment, because you're still in better shape at that point.
So that number was 885-995-HOPE?
888. It's toll-free.
888-995-HOPE. Very good. Well, Carolyn, thank you for your work, and I can direct people to sfgate.com if they would like to read your front page article today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, my pleasure. That's Carolyn Saeed from the San Francisco Chronicle. It's the Tom Hartman Program, and Dan from San Diego, you are absolutely next. You're on the air, sir. Go right ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Going back to the caller who talked about using the GOP's rhetoric, they, you know, we shouldn't do that. Democrats, they keep doing it, and they should use it if they're going to use it to beat the GOP over the head. A classic case of that was some of the Democrats actually said, we'll take no options off the table, and Hillary even said that about Iran. And what they should have done was when the impeachment came up, they should have said, no options are off the table about that. But, you know, they just don't message correctly.
Well, Dan, I fully agree with you, and just in the interest of full disclosure, I'm here in San Francisco. I know Nancy Pelosi. I worked on a campaign for her about 10 years ago, and I have the very highest respect for her. But
yes.
I cannot understand why, once she was elected speaker, that she didn't modify her stance on impeachment, at least to the extent of saying, I want a full investigation,
right.
And if it leads to impeachment, so be it.
Yeah.
I do understand that during the political campaign last year, in trying to win back control of the House, they made a calculation that it was bad to put impeachment out there as a prospect because Karl Rove was trying to use it to rally the Republican base.
Yeah.
But once the election was final, I believe the Democrats should have pivoted, and she should have simply said, Congressman Conyers is in charge of that committee, and he should follow his nose.
Right. And I was talking mostly about how Democrats don't message, but what I really called about is, and it's speculation, but I see a pattern. Recall Larry Wilkerson, I think on Oberman, said there was a 90 to 120-day plan for Iraq, then we'd reduce the amount of presence and then basically sort of have like an over-the-horizon.
And Tommy Franks kept quiet about that. He never made any mention of that. They gave him the Medal of Freedom. Then you look at George Tenet. You know, he kept quiet about the manipulation and cherry-picking of the intelligence, and he got a Medal of Freedom. So the third guy that got a medal was Bremer. So it makes you wonder, what did he keep quiet about? And if that pattern holds as with Franks and Tenet, then Bremer, he was ordered to debathify and disband the Iraqi military, and he got a Medal of Freedom for keeping quiet and taking the rap on that.
Well, but
what
he
think?
Did you see his recent op-ed in the New York Times where he tried to share the blame for debathification and disbanding the army? He blamed it on Rumsfeld. He blamed it on Bush. He
Bremer did?
Yeah, I think he left out General Garner. But he basically said, oh, it wasn't me. That was already decided before I got to Iraq, and all I did was implement it. So it is interesting to see them pointing fingers in this manner at this time. Dan, thanks for a great call. We're going to take a break here and return in just a moment on the Tom Hartman Program. You can call us toll-free at 866-303-2270. And my email is peter@peterbcollins.com. One of the thrills of hosting the Hartman Show is connecting with lost buddies like Bob Shulman. Thanks for the email, Bob.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
When it's not always raining, there'll be days like this. When there's no one complaining, there'll be days like this. Everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this.
Little Van Morrison tune here on the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Peter B. Collins in San Francisco. Tom returns on Tuesday. And here in San Francisco, the Hartman Program is heard on Green 960 KKGN. And it gets all the way across the bay to Berkeley, where Lawrence joins us. Hello, Lawrence. You're on the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes. Hi. How you doing? It's so good to hear you back in the Bay Area.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's what I love to do.
Yeah. I wanted to say that you say Barbara Lee says come out and create some street heat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what we need to do. And we are having demonstrations not just in Washington this Saturday, but also in Berkeley. And Barbara Lee is, in fact, going to be at our Berkeley demonstration, giving a little bit of a talk. It's going to start at 1 o'clock in People's Park in Berkeley.
Okay.
But I wanted to talk about the fact that we need a different variety of demonstration. Above all, we need people. We need thousands and hundreds of thousands of committed activists that are working within groups, because you can't do anything alone. And a demonstration should serve that purpose. A demonstration should not be just a lot of speeches, but people, it should be a university in a way, a university as to how to conduct peace movement activities. And that is what we're going to do in Berkeley. We're going to have discussion circles on such topics as organizing for demonstrations, how to do it, how to do research, publicity, and media into the war, outreach to military and vets, campus organizing, congressional action and impeachment, religious and spiritual groups, mediation and nonviolent conflict resolution, and so on.
I think that's great. And, Lawrence, you get an A on the media outreach part. You're on hold for over an hour. Thank you. Well, let me jump to another call, but thanks for getting the word out. And we do need more people to get active. Get away from your computer screen, get off that cell phone, and go coalesce with others and work on these issues. It's so important. Dorothy, Raymond, Washington, you're next. Thanks for calling the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi. I was going to mention something about Nancy Pelosi, and you're wondering why. I think that she and a lot of the other Democrats are controlled by the lobbyists, the AIPAC lobbyists that don't want Bush impeached.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree that AIPAC has undue influence on Democrats and Republicans in Washington.
Right, and that was it. And then also about the demonstrations, are great, and people have been demonstrating since before the war. But
well, that's
the
right.
Media doesn't give them much attention.
No, it's true. It's this conundrum that the only time the media reports is when, you know, people break the law or use vandalism, other techniques attributed to skinheads and other direct action types. And we really do need family-friendly protests where we get a whole cross-section of people. I was in Seattle for the WTO protests back in, 99 or 2000, and it was so impressive to see the whole range of people, age, occupation, income levels, arrayed there to speak out against globalization. We need more efforts like that, broad-based and diverse. Thank you very much. Let me squeak in one more call. Gail in San Francisco, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. It's Peter B.
Thank you very much. I just wanted, getting back to Petraeus, his boss, Admiral Fallon called him a...
Careful. It's $350,000 if you say the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Well,
now, isn't this interesting, Gail? You can say ass-kissing, okay? That won't get me in trouble. And you can say chicken, and you can edge right up to it. You can say chicken, shh. But don't go any further, because then we could have
I won't.
One of those.
You know the quote. I mean, he basically called him a sniveling AK chicken...
bootlicker.
Right. And he's been very good. And Admiral Fallon has also fought Bush on... he's the one who refused to send the ships into the Persian Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
And Fallon has been fighting Bush, and of course Bush never talked to him. But Fallon is the boss.
That's right.
It just makes me crazy what's going on.
He is the head of Central Command. You are correct, Gail. Thanks for the call. Let me jump to Jeff in Denver. Hi, Jeff. You're on the Tom Hartman Program. Thanks for your call today. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi. As far as language, I think we can use some verbal aikido. I was using, you know, Bush's wording against him, and right now we could refer to betrayed us in a load of Crocker.
You know what? Somebody named Jeff in Denver just sent me an email just like that. Thank you.
Yeah, because I got cut off earlier. My call got dropped, so I wrote that in.
Okay.
Yeah, and it talked about the splurge rather than the surge.
Right. That's
and
a good point.
Since there are eight candidates in the last debate, we could talk about Ron Paul and the Seven Dorks.
You're clever, and apparently you have time on your hands, Jeff.
Too much. Actually, not enough. But anyway, about the election stuff, Brad Friedman, as a longtime activist, I've just got to say amen, Brad. Yeah, we do have the hardware in place now, and it is being used in elections all the time to count paper. Every place, or almost every place, has a paper counter. Denver mm-hmm. had an election, mail-in election. We used all paper. Even though they have DREs, they still can do all paper elections. And the Holt bill does not change the way the vote is countercasted. And what we're cast, what we need to do yeah. is really repeat this mantra, again, using language. We need to count and cast the vote on paper. Count
yep.
and cast the vote on paper.
Hand-counted paper ballots. That is the solution to fair and honest elections in this country. Jeff, thank you very much. I want to thank everybody who called in today. And just in closing, I would like to once again dedicate this program today to two soldiers lost in Iraq, Staff Sergeant Yance T. Gray and Sergeant Omar Mora, two of the seven non-commissioned officers who wrote a powerful op-ed piece that was published in the New York Times on August 19th. They told the truth about what's really going on in Iraq. Contrast that with what you've heard this week in the Dog and Pony Show from Petraeus and Crocker. Thanks for listening. As I mentioned, Laura Flanders will sit in for Tom tomorrow. And if you'd like to send me an email, drop me a note at peter@peterbcollins.com. That's the website where you can find out more about me and listen to archive programs from my West Coast syndicated show. Thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you soon here on Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.